Welcome to the RHP Market Talk Podcast, Episode 31. Recorded here in Houston, Texas by RHP Wealth Management, an independent financial services and investment advisory firm. I'm Natalie Pica, founding partner, and I'm joined today by our portfolio manager and founding partner, Glenn Royal, and our investment analyst, Jason Strzeski. Thank you guys for joining me again today.
Always glad to be here with you, Natalie.
Well, it's back to just the three of us. We've had a couple of episodes here back to back where we've had special guests. And so today we want to really focus in on the markets, talking about what we just got through here with the debt ceiling fight. Glad to see that sort of behind us, and kick it off with some conversations around the banking crisis and just where are we right now in the economy? Are we getting ready? Coming 4th of July is coming up. Second half of the year, what are we going to be looking at for the rest of this year? Let's start with a debt ceiling.
Well, thankfully, that's behind us, right?
Yeah.
We got that resolved. That was one of the ones that, you know, 70% probability was going to get resolved, mm-hmm. but that low probability that it wasn't created a lot of consternation and, you know, anxiety that we dealt with the last few weeks. But they were able to get that through, so the government's going to continue to fund their debt. So no defaults, no risk to the U.S. dollar, no risk to the U.S. economy. But we're in a good spot with that.
Banking crisis.
Yeah, there too. You know, here's a case, in hindsight, you can see it. But, you know, before it happened, you know, no one knew. But the fact that it was largely contained amongst, you know, the handful of banks, mm-hmm. and the response of the FDIC caps and the different things that Treasury did, it basically contained it. And I can tell because I'm watching the KBW Bank Index, mm-hmm. which is basket of bank stocks. They were down 10% year to date going through that period. Now they completely reversed that and have gains for the year.
So it's interesting that we're talking about, too, really what we consider risk in the market events right there together in this first half. I mean, we came out in first quarter really strong, kind of a surprise starting out 2023. We kind of expected that pullback. And then we had these two big risk off events. I'm sorry. And here we are, second half of the year.
So there's an old saw in Wall Street, it's been around forever, that bull markets climb walls of worry. And right now you have the sentiment in such extreme bearish setup, record levels in money market cash. Sure. I know Jason's looking at these things. That, for me, is a contrarian. I like knowing that I have $5 trillion in money market assets looking for a return on investment.
Right.
Just waiting for the moment. I see what I see in the bond market. I've seen a number of things. So I think the setup's pretty good for risk assets between now and the end of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. That firepower is definitely going to need to find a home, you know, once we get to pausing and cutting eventually with rates. And, you know, touching on that, might as well. So next week, you know, this week kind of a little bit of a quiet week with the Fed blackout period. But next week we have CPI reporting on June 13th. And then we have the rate decision on June 14th. So picking up a little bit right back where we were.
What do you think they're going to be seeing on that CPI print when they walk in?
You know, so we're anticipating, currently we're at 4.9% CPI year over year. And then the surveys, Street's anticipating 4.1. And honestly, you know, all things considered, all of the hikes that we've done this year, all of the liquidity that has been completely drained out of the system, things are pretty good, all in all. I mean, you look at the economy, you look at some of the recent economic data, you know, we went from 9.1% on inflation, you know, a little bit more than a year ago in July 22, to now chop that in half. And yeah, we still have some room to go. To get to the Fed's terminal rate, 2%, 3%, that'll be another discussion. But these are all good things. You know, the economy's staying intact. We've talked about it a lot, where we wouldn't be able to do this if we didn't have the strength behind this.
Yeah, what I see this set up is, to Jason's point on the inflation story, you know, there's this thing called the base effect. When we add these numbers, we do month over month and year over year. And the month-over-month rates are dropping. They're still up positive. Inflation's still here. We all know that. But it's up 0.2 to 0.3% per month increase. A year ago, we were at 9.1. What we're seeing is with just that little smaller increase from the prior year, the overall CPI, just on the calculations, could even drop to 3% by the end of this year. Now, where the rubber meets the road and where Wall Street's going to try to figure this out is, what is the level of the neutral Fed funds rate going to be in the future? Where will the Fed take what we call this R-star? Where are they going to take this federal funds rate that's not too hot, not too cold, just enough for the economy? And one thing I think was going to be very, very different is, you know, it's 15 years ago in 2008 in the banking crisis, and the Fed had to do extraordinary measures and take interest rates to zero. The Fed's average inflation target was 2%. That's, and no one can give us a good reason why that number was chosen. Mm-hmm. It's an arbitrary number.
Right.
So that's what I think is going to be happening in the course of the next year is, what is that true neutral rate? And it matters, because that's going to be probably where the Fed, once they stop raising rates and they start to cut rates, they're not going to go too far below neutral. If I go back to what happened post-2008, the Fed went negative federal funds rate, negative real rates below that neutral rate,
right,
by 1.5%, and kept it there forever. I think we're going to see what we call these positive real rates, where the federal funds rate is above inflation, mm-hmm. Just enough to restore that monetary tool in the Fed's kit.
The way that we've thought about it is, we haven't been in a normal rate or a normal world since 2008. And I say that because even when we were in COVID crisis, right, mm-hmm. whatever that was with the markets, a complete unknown, 2008 was still hanging in people's memories very, right. very, very heavily. Mm-hmm. And truly, we're back to that place where, I mean, savers should make some money on their money,
yeah,
right?
You get paid on your money market.
You should get paid on your money.
Retirees right. that are dependent on CDs and things like that.
So some sort of a normal rate environment, a pre-2008, what that does is it puts a tool back in the Fed's toolbox.
And then our tool kit is
exactly.
a portfolio manager.
Yeah.
Higher rates for longer. So next week, we're kind of anticipating the market's pricing a pause, and then the following meeting in July, late July, another hike, but that's really kind of murky at this point as hiking yeah. cycle towards the end. So
I think Royal Bank of Australia was the first one to announce a pause, their central bank, two meetings ago, based upon future data, right? And then they've hiked the last two meetings after saying they're going to pause. So we're at that point where they may talk pause, but they may still put another hike on July or so. But maybe another quarter to half a point. That's
okay.
about it.
So,
if that.
You know, for many of our listeners, and those, if you are an RHP client, you get to have these conversations with us on a very regular basis, right?
Right.
But for those who may not be quite as tuned in, why do we care about that terminal rate? Why does it make that big of a difference? What does it mean for markets overall? And I was just looking at some headlines a few minutes before we walked in here. You know, tech has led this rally this year, and
right.
now I'm seeing financials are starting to lead some of these mm-hmm. gains. So
value.
What does it mean when we talk about this terminal rate and where we are with how it overall affects earnings?
Yep.
For those clients that may not quite grasp exactly why we keep harping on, where are interest rates going? What does it
yeah.
matter, right?
Cut and dry, it's the cost of doing business. So,
right.
I mean, it's going to impact everything from, it is the tool to expand and contract the economy, and one of the few tools that the Fed has to do so. And that runs the show. That runs equities. That runs fixed income. That's, you know, our end all be all. So
part of your valuation measure, you know,
yep.
the risk-free rate that you tie back into the present value analysis. Because when we're buying companies, we're buying that future stream of earnings.
Mm-hmm.
I need to discount that future stream of earnings using this rate to present value. So am I overpaying for the stock or underpaying? Is it a
right.
deal?
Sure. So it's funny you bring up the tech rally. What started off this year is kind of a junk rally, mean reversion.
Right.
In January and February a little bit. Well, now after this most recent earnings period, the FANGs have shown, and we talked about this last podcast or a couple ago, that they showed up, they came, they have the earnings growth expectations, and they're going to continue to come. And a little bit of that with the AI frenzy and everything that comes along with that. But there is yeah. something to it. I mean, barriers to entry to get into that kind of technology are extremely steep. The cost of it, I mean, you need to have the scale to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And those names do. So, you know, you look at a return this year, those names, the top seven, they're up about 50, 55% versus an S&P a total return, so including dividends paid, roughly 2-2.5, and
equal weighted
without those the overweights to the tech. So, you know, you look at that and it kind of, it's indicative showing investors, they're looking for safety and growth.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit backwards, you know, considering what happened last year, but the price was put in last year for a majority of these companies.
Reversion.
Yeah.
Big time, so with those big techs.
That's where they're jumping.
And I think people are, they're concerned about the narrow breadth leadership of this market. You know, Jason's comment, these top five stocks, they're make up 24% of the S&P 500. That's an all-time record level. The last time they were this large, they got up to about 18% of the S&P 500. That was around the dot-com era. So we are seeing very narrow market breadth, which is just leaders versus losers.
Advancers and decliners on the day.
Yeah. And you're, and to Jason's point about, you know, the broader market up 2%, the S&P up 11, it's because of that heavy tech weighting. But here's what I think is interesting. Whenever we've had five prior periods where if I take the S&P 100 compared to the S&P 500. So it's the same subset of the 500. It's just the 100 largest companies.
Right.
That's where the leadership is. That's outperforming the S&P 500 by about 3.5 percentage points right now. We had in the last 3 months. We haven't seen that normally. You don't see that type of just narrow leadership market. So you would expect a mean reversion, right? You expect something to correct. And that's where I think the press is, all the negativity that you're seeing right now about markets. But I want to point out that in these past five prior cycles where we had this dislocation, small concentration of leadership, the mean reversion was actually the rest of the market melting up to catch up with the tech stocks. So I've got tech stocks up 50%.
Sure.
I got a broader market that's up too. Today, we're seeing banks. We're seeing value stocks. I'm seeing the Russell 2000, which was really kind of flat for the year, up 2.5%. So the rally is starting to broaden out. I think part of that is the negative bias that institutional managers and everybody, every strategist has on the market, but they're being kind of sucked in, that FOMO, that fear of missing out.
Right. They've got to be there. You can't.
You have to. After a year like last year, if you underperformed and you're, you know, big money manager, this year, if you're underperforming again, which, again, January, we were going in a recession. February is all about inflation. And March was a banking crisis.
Mm-hmm.
So you have had every reason to want to be on the sidelines, but the market's up 12% in your face.
Exactly.
And you miss that after a year like last year. So now you get career risk. Managers afraid of losing their job. Money starts coming on the sidelines. And I think what's going to feed that is the inflation story that's trending down, like we talked about, the smaller month-over-month numbers. At the same time, earnings are hanging in here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the recession we've been waiting for 6 quarters.
Now, that was going to be my next question. Is I don't want to say recession-proof, as it's economy recession-proof, but the recession is looking less and less likely in here.
There's different varieties of recession. We have what we sometimes we have rolling recession. So the broader market doesn't go down, but it hits energy, and then it hits technology, and it hits materials. It just rolls through the economy. I think in this case, there was so much money pushed into the system during the pandemic, records amount of globally of currency pushed in the system, and it has been withdrawn fast, you know, 5% hike last year. But that money is still out there. You still see businesses that are retaining labor. They're trying to grow their labor. They're trying to hang on. They're not cutting into the bone. So I think the setup is actually pretty good, and I'm quite optimistic on the market. I expect some volatility. We should all expect that. You've had a pretty strong run. Are we due for a little correction? Yeah. But one other thing we like to do is, okay, let's play a game. If I threw stocks or bonds on the table, which one would you grab? You know?
Well, Glenn, with my age, I know what I'm grabbing every day.
Right. Yeah, he's going for the long bond.
He's going for the long bond.
Leveraged equity.
Yeah, triple leveraged cash.
These are all inside jokes, guys.
But no, basically, so, and that sets us up too. Not only do I have an equity market that's got a stealth bull market going on underneath us, it's starting to broaden out. I've got inflation coming in and the earnings that are holding in here. I'm looking at the bond market and I'm seeing rates I hadn't seen in 15 years.
That's
and
right.
opportunities.
Right.
So we have in our portfolios, we're overweight fixed income, no surprise there in how we approach things. But what we're starting to do now and within fixed income, where we had been treasuries and then we extended our maturities like last year when rates went up.
Yep.
Now we're starting to put in credit risk into the portfolio. So I'm a little high yield, little things like that. Not necessarily extending my duration, because that's something I think people need to understand. The bond market is rates could still stay sticky and high for 20 years. You know, so I don't have perhaps the reinvestment risk this time around, or the last 30 years where they just kept going down. You had to reinvest in lower rates.
Right.
But I still, you know, at the margin, we've got rich markets, et cetera. So I don't want to put a lot of what I call duration. I want a lot of long maturities in the portfolio. I still want to shorten up my maturities, but I'm okay with taking credit risk because the balance sheet of the economy is pretty good.
Well, that was going to be my next question is, you know, with higher interest rates, we expected some sort of a credit crunch. And I do know that's out there in some places, but where...
Commercial real estate.
Commercial real estate's had a credit crunch for sure.
Yeah, so there's part of your rolling recession theory in a sense. I mean, commercial real estate's getting crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is just a higher cost of capital. The other thing is we are seeing a pickup in bankruptcies. And so you have to be careful of this. These were companies who were already undercapitalized and they just had their interest rate expense basically double on them.
Right.
In the last year, they couldn't afford it before.
Mm-hmm.
Now they can't afford it and they can't go to the markets for more debt financing. So it's shut down on them. You got to be careful. You got to pick your spots in here. You want to be prudent about it. But opportunity is here in the fixed income space.
And we got a weird, I don't want to say weird, but it was an unusual labor market, the payrolls print that came out, right? With the non-farm payrolls increasing to 339, but we also got an unemployment rate that rose. You have some thoughts on that? Because again, it goes back to this kind of crazy place that we are in this market.
One thing I want to stress, a consequence of the pandemic and even our political cycle that's been the last 8 years is we don't like to do surveys anymore. People, or they give bad data. Remember how hard the polling was for the election?
Because
people were giving bad information.
Yeah.
Purposely giving the wrong answer. The amount of people that take the employment surveys today is some of the lowest on record of respondents to these surveys. So we have to be careful with the data when it gets a little wonky like that. Some of it could just be in the nature of the survey itself. But basically companies, I mean, there's been some rolling, you know, technology companies have had the biggest layoffs, right-sizing their ship. They've largely stopped that, by the way. You don't see people cutting into the fat. They've done some right-sizing, overhiring during pandemic.
Right.
We've corrected that. But all in all, labor seems to be hanging in there. And one of your biggest telltales for me is the housing market. Housing's staying in there pretty good. You know, I know we have a shortage. We've got demand. We do have issues with, the low rate structure. The last decade has got, you know, it's created immobility. People aren't moving because they can't afford to leave their house, which feeds into higher prices because there's no supply. But that's a telltale. If I still have a fairly strong housing market that's tied to labor, I'm in pretty good shape.
Another question that we've gotten pretty regularly around here is the strength of the dollar.
And
you know, I've heard some rumors out there that, the dollar's not going to be the global currency anymore.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. And I think it really kicked off even more so with the banking crisis because there was some concern that it was going to weaken the dollar. And we have seen that. If you look at the dollar as the world's reserve currency, it's dropped from 70-80% of reserves down to, you know, mid-50s. So it's still a very key component, but clearly, you know, the Chinese yuan's gone up to 7% of world reserves. You know, the euro, 10% or so. We've not seen the wide adoption of a move away from the dollar, and that's simply really because of the strength of our legal system that protects that asset.
Mm-hmm.
Goes back to the debt ceiling, which is probably a greater risk to the dollar.
Yes.
Had we not paid, then the dollar would have got crushed, but... because we didn't have a debt ceiling crisis, there's another reason why people feel confident in owning dollars. Still affects a lot of the world's trade. You're still going to see movement away from the dollar, but it's going to be glacial. It's going to take a very, very long time. I'm not as concerned about as some of the recent press that we're seeing about it. And then, look, the other, I'm going to throw this in there a little bit too. I know we have people that watch China very, very closely on the stage of the global economy. You know, China was supposed to reopen this year, had the Big Bang effect. Turns out it was just basically that reopening purchase. I'm going to go buy cosmetics and handbags, expensive Gucci items, and I'm done. I got out of the house. And so there was no carryover effect, global manufacturing from China, which is a deflationary effect.
Playing into energy prices big time.
So commodities
are all, energy, commodities, all good things for the inflation picture altogether.
Yeah. And China's going to have, it has its issues. We know they have a lot of debt in their government-sponsored enterprises. They have a lot of debt in their provinces that they're going to have to do it. And they have massive unemployment, 20% unemployment in their youth that are graduating with no jobs. And then you have that one-child policy that's affected the dynamics of that country demographically. Right. I've got an aging population dependent upon the younger population to take care of them, and the younger ones can't find work.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in a tough spot. So don't count on China to lead the global economy. They got to deal with their own issues.
Yeah.
So does that maybe give a little bit more runway for the U.S. in this, dual system world?
Certainly.
U.S. becomes more of a manufacturing nation. You're seeing that semiconductors, different things. That's probably the underlying trade that, out there, but it's in my mind is if we're going to a bifurcated global manufacturing system, what side of the trade do I want to be on?
Right.
Those are bigger picture stuff.
Yeah. That's longer term. Too.
Right.
That's going to take some time. We've talked about this in previous podcasts about bringing some of that manufacturing and that chip shortage and all those things back to the U.S., why we couldn't just turn that faucet on and make that change. It's a hard change.
Easier to throw money at than
fix. Speaking of that, and just jumping in a little bit to talk a little bit about technology, circling back around on AI and the hype and what we're seeing. And how's that going to change the world? I mean, it's out there.
If I still have a job in 2 years, let me know. who knows? I saw everyone that thought we had insulated ourselves from that type of career risk from technology, like copywriters. They're losing their jobs to AI copywriting.
ChatGPT, right?
All this stuff's starting to happen. So I think it's fascinating that it brought technology comes in these massive ways. First, it was the internet.
Right,
PCs, but then it was really the internet.
Yeah.
And then the next big game changer was mobile technology. And then I would say the third game changer was cloud and storage, right? Remember, everybody had to carry all these big drives and all that. Thank God.
Hey, Netflix.
Right.
Difference between going and picking up Redbox, that thing, and
exactly.
Or actually just, I'll just
go to the mailbox and then
right, turn
the
TV. Yeah, I had to go pick it up.
No, I think what Glenn's leading to is, with all technological developments, yes, there can be some menial job loss, but really it's just displacement until those new jobs are created. Because at the end of the day, AI, there's a lot of incredible things about it. There's also some questionable things that, our government and other entities need to be
in
on
the
top
world.
Of. Yeah. But all in all, it's a means of productivity. It's incredibly powerful tool for the applications are almost universal for everything that they're coming out with. So it is exciting. I'll be honest, it is. And, as an advisor, you say, hey, you have the fight against indexing. Now you have the fight against AI. I think at the end of the day, there's numerous industries where you need that human element. You need that person to talk to. And that's what we're here for at the end of the day.
Use it as a tool instead of a replacement.
Right.
Siri can only do so much.
Well,
so.
Yeah. And if you're questioning whether this is really us, it's really us. We didn't give this to AI. We didn't ask anything else to just take our voices and produce this podcast. So when you talk to RHP, you really talk to RHP.
Yeah.
It's us. So
no, it's an exciting area. It's certainly got the mindset. Now, maybe is it overdone in the short run?
Could be. Yeah.
But there are certainly companies that we own in the portfolio that are benefactors of AI, and will be there for a long time.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We covered a lot of ground in a very short period of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to talk about before we close this one out?
No, just, I think the focus now with the debt ceiling and the banking crisis behind us will be back to the Fed. So, enjoy your summer, but keep your eyes tuned to Chair Powell, see what he's up to.
That's right. Well, I want to say thank you to our listeners. Thank you, Jason and Glenn, as always, for being ready to just jump in on these things. To you guys that know us well and, are in and out of our office, that our heads are in this all the time. We don't prep a whole lot for these podcasts because it's kind of a carryover of the conversations that we're having amongst ourselves or with clients. And so anyway, I appreciate you guys being willing to kind of do this. And I don't always tell them what I'm going to ask.
Yeah, I just get an Outlook notification and then we're rolling.
Here we go.
That's how we do it around here.
That's how we go. So thank you to our listeners for subscribing to RHP Market Talk. You can also follow us on LinkedIn and Facebook. Please join us for our July edition of Market Talk, where we're going to have a special guest, Vanessa Solis Meduja with Waldron & Schneider Law Firm. She's going to be joining us for a very interesting discussion about what you should do before your second marriage and probate nightmares. So if you have any questions or you'd like to discuss today's topics, please feel free to contact us through our website at royalharborpartners.com. At RHP, we're passionate about planning for your financial future. Through our one-on-one conversations, we can help you navigate your personal wealth management and investment journey. How different will your life look with the right advice? Royal Harbor Partners is a registered investment advisor, and the opinions expressed by Royal Harbor Partners on this show are their own. Registration of an investment advisor does not imply a certain level of skill or training. All statements and opinions expressed are based upon information considered reliable, although it should not be relied upon as such. Any statements or opinions are subject to change without notice. Information presented is for educational purposes only and does not intend to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies. Investments involve risk and, unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Information expressed does not take into account your specific situation or objectives and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for any individual. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from a qualified tax, legal, or investment advisor to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.